This podcast is about spoilers and discussion. It's also about spooky stuff. You know, any film that we talk about here, we recommend you see in advance. You've been warned.
All right, you primitive screwheads, listen up.
What an excellent day for an exorcism.
Horror. There is no shortage of monsters to haunt our dreams.
Horror. You got red on you.
They're coming to get you, Barbara.
Horror.
Alive, it's alive.
Groovy.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Oh, the Horror. It's a look at classic and modern horror films from an expert and a newcomer's perspective. I'm the newcomer, Steve Allman.
And I'm the expert, Rob Holmes.
Well, we got another one, and this is probably one of your favorites, Rob.
It is one of my favorites. There are a few things that I'm a little always iffy about with this film, but it is 2003's High Tension.
And you told me as we were sort of getting ready that this was one of the movies that got you into wanting to make movies and into filmmaking itself.
Yeah, this was part of the French New Wave that came out between the late 90s all the way through about 2007's Inside and 2008's Frontières. It's High Tension. I remember seeing this film. I was in college at the time. I'd heard about it. People were like, this movie is insane. It has a crazy twist in it that you may hate, but this movie is very intense, and it's definitely a showcase of Alex Aja, his filmmaking ability, which we later get to see again in 2006's The Hills Have Eyes, which I personally enjoy as well. The rest of his films I'm a little iffy with, but those two definitely were the ones that got me really wanting to pursue directing and producing more so than any other films had.
So, and this was, as you said, like these early to mid 2000s, like independent horror specifically was having a bit of a revival. And you say French New Wave as well, but like I remember again seeing a lot of like indie gritty horror movies coming out more and more in the mainstream, and this being one of them, where these international releases of like these fringe horror movies were just getting big theatrical releases back in the States. And this is probably one of the more prominent ones that came out of it, at least for memories were concerned.
It did, but there was so when it went to theater, there was trailers for it to come into theaters, and it was still called Switchblade Romance at the time. That's the UK title of this film.
Horrible name.
Yeah. Because it almost gives away too much, because when it's called Switchblade Romance, you're like, oh, it's going to deal with some sort of weird love triangle type thing.
I think a dumb grindhousey movie.
But yeah. And High Tension, I think, definitely is a more apt title for this film. But I remember seeing the trailer for it, and it was supposed to come out on Valentine's Day.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it got pushed to an August release afterwards.
Okay.
I don't know. I think it was very limited in its U.S. run. So I was disappointed about that, but I ended up being able to get a bootleg copy of it and watched that a lot. And anyway, this film is about two best friends, Marie and Alex, and they are going to spend a weekend at Alex's parents' farmhouse so they can study and just kind of like get ready for their exams. In the midst of this, all of a sudden, someone just shows up at the farmhouse one night and just starts killing everybody.
Yeah.
Kidnaps Alex, and then Marie has to go after her and try and save her. That's the basic premise of it, and it seems pretty cut and dry. Not so cut and dry as you start watching it.
Right.
It is very psychological. There are a lot of twists and turns throughout the film. But they definitely ratchet up the tension really, really well in this film.
When I was first sort of like trying to assess this movie after I had seen it, I think the first thing that I came away with it is that it's very, very well made. And I say that mainly to assess, like, you know, how good looking the movie is, but also in the way that it executes its scenarios.
Mm-hmm.
Each from scene to scene interaction and sort of like stakes getting higher and higher almost at the end of each scene. I think that was done really, really well.
Yeah.
But I can't seem to find out anything that really stood out tremendously. It always seemed to be just like a very nice exhibit of like an escalating sort of bit of tension, if you would forgive the phrase.
To me, it was a nice game of cat and mouse the entire time. It makes it seem that Marie... It seems like she's one step ahead of this killer, but the killer is somehow one step ahead of her the entire time. As far as... There's certain moments, like, when they're in the house and she's upstairs and then the killer comes... Or she, like, decides she's going to wipe out the sink and make the bed to make it seem like she's not there.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I'm like, why would somebody do that? And then why
That's a lot of effort to go through for...
It's a ridiculous amount of effort to go through. And then the guy comes up there and then even checks the tap and feels that there's a little water on it. So he's like, no, somebody is here.
Mm-hmm.
But how would he know that?
It's a... I wouldn't exactly figure out, like, again, it doesn't make really dumb mistakes or, like, dumb leaps of logic, but...
It's the final twist that makes all that stuff make sense, but I almost feel like it's forced to make it make sense.
Because there's an interesting thing that movies tend to do where, like, good mysteries will make you kind of question them, but also make you fascinated as to why it's happening. This is just like, well, wait, what the fuck does that mean? Like, why is that happening? As opposed to, like... Oh, what is that supposed to mean? Like, it's not the fact that you're expecting a twist, but you're expecting a form of an explanation in some way.
Right.
This, you weren't even expecting an explanation. You just see these things that happen, then they're just like, well, I'm not quite sure.
Yeah, there was one, I think, along with the water tap scene.
Yes.
When she's in the gas station, she's like snuck into the back of the guy's truck as he has Alex in the back and he's driven to this gas station. She is able to get out and run in there, and there's the cashier guy, Jimmy, in there. That's a very strange scene because you see the guy like look at her for a second, and the killer's like, he has the line, who are you looking at? Because he starts like walking through the place trying to find her and find her. And then when she's chasing him down later, she ends up grabbing the gun that was behind the counter. Well, apparently he unloaded it and kept the bullets with him, knowing that she would be following him.
It's a weird, and the movie always seems to be like one step ahead of everything that happens. Like, well, I thought of that. Isn't that a clever game?
And it was interesting because as you're watching, you're like, who the hell is this guy? Like, if he's if he's always one step ahead and he's just messing with her, like, who is this guy?
It makes
you
feel like he's like the movie itself is cheating.
And you're at this point, because I didn't know the twist going into it, I was super excited. Like, everything up until the twist, I'm loving the film. Mm-hmm. I'm just like, I know it seems a little far-fetched and ridiculous, but maybe it'll all end up tying in together in the end, and everything will be awesome, and, like, this will be the most epic horror film of all time. And then the twist happens.
Right.
And then the twist the entire time is Marie is actually this psycho killer, and she has a split personality.
Right.
And she's been just... This has all kind of, like, been in her head for the most part.
Mm-hmm.
That's where loses me a little bit. It only took a couple of... It took several rewatchings of this film for me to appreciate it to the point that I do now. Because there's moments that Aja does in this that I think are really stunning. Like, when she's upstairs and the killer is going around and killing the father and going after the mother.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
She's in this dark area, almost like a, like, I think it's like an attic area, but it's like pitch black up there pretty much, and it's just her. And so I'm like, oh, it's just her trapped in her own mind watching all
and,
this.
Yeah, and she's like kind of, yeah.
Because it starts with like that masturbation scene. It's basically like she's so in love with Alex's character, but hasn't told her anything about it. That this other sick part of her or something, or maybe something that's always
it'll
been
like
there,
projects
out. And so when you see her in that dark room area, that's her just trapped inside of her head while this other personality is out there doing all of this.
Exactly. And I feel like, because, and you mentioned this twist, and I feel like lesser movies would have fallen apart at this point. And the way that it kind of wraps up every sort of interaction that you think of, because we've seen movies like this before where the person to blame is actually just themselves rather than this. And the way that these movies unravel, it didn't wow me exactly, but it did enough to where, okay, I understand that that makes sense with all of these things. And for me, at least, the way that you need to wow me is to make a way that, like, I couldn't have possibly anticipated how all of these steps could have gone. But it's just like, oh, okay, this was her projecting onto something else.
Right.
And her seeing all of this. And that kind of dissonance to make with the audience and like that kind of leap of faith to give them that, it's a bit of a challenge. And I think that this movie just does just enough to get by.
Yeah, I mean, there's, looking back at it, there are a few issues. The scene in the beginning where you see the guy's truck and he's getting head from a decapitated head, that scene in itself, and I've talked to a couple of people about this, and it almost doesn't need to even be there if you want that final twist to make more sense. Because seeing that, you're like, is this what she's thinking while she's in the car with Alex on her way there? Like, right. Is that something that she's having as like a weird fantasy while she's sitting in the car? Like, is that part of her personality just waiting to come out? And maybe it is, but it just seems so random, and it makes it just seem like there is this, it's definitely like the MacGuffin,
right? And a scene like that asks more questions than it answers.
Yeah, really. It really does.
And that's kind of where, if you're willing to kind of go with that idea, then you're just like, I don't know, that was just a weird thing. Like,
I mean, I like to think about it as being, there's stuff that's just like lying dormant in her still that hasn't fully come out yet, and it's just something that's there, or this sick fantasy that she has, because we don't know any backstory of this character except they went to, you know, they go to school together and they're friends. That's it. You know, and we realize later that she's been in love with Alex this entire time. So we don't know how deep rooted this obsession goes, and how really, obviously by the end, we know that she's super fucked up because she killed the entire family.
Right.
Especially like the girl's little brother, that scene. Yeah. You don't even have to see it happen, but just hearing it, you're like, oh my God. And that's what I really liked about it too, is that Alex Aja has this like really good hand of going over the top with a lot of the gore, but then being able to restrain himself on certain moments to really push an emotional impact.
He does. He knows exactly how to like twist his actors to make an effective scene work.
Yeah.
I think it's just more or less in the mechanics of the execution of this story up until its climax was just a little flawed for me. But that being said, I absolutely love the way that this movie looks.
I love the way it looks too. And
this
I love
entire
the gore.
Like first half, oh gorgeous. Yeah. Gorgeous. And it's a very interesting sort of like artistic sentiment to have with a horror movie, but I actually kind of really like.
Yeah.
And I don't often see that, because you never think about how it's like, oh, this horror movie, it's so good looking. Like, it's something that I don't often say, but I do find it that this one in particular, great cinematography.
Oh, really great cinematography. And I especially like, so once she gets the car from the gas station and starts going through and driving and chasing after him, there are some really cool moments. There's the moment where the killer ends up having the booze and pours it all over Alex's character.
Right.
Gets ready to light. And we're listening to Newborn by Muse as that's going on.
Yeah.
Just like this.
Back
is
when this was popping off.
Oh, it was awesome. And I'm like, this is such an awesome moment of this film where it's just this guy is just sick and really just mentally fucked up and just trying to torture her in any way possible, whether it's psychologically or physically. And just that moment where you're like, is he going to drop the match and just like torture? And then he just laughs and just lets it go. And then you realize by the end of the twist, it's like, that's Marie. Crazy ass Marie.
Just doing all of that. And that's, and that, and when I said before, like when it answers more questions than answers, it's on the burden of the audience.
Asks more questions than answers.
That answered a question for me.
Oh, that did. Yeah.
That scene very much confirmed that I'm like, okay, something like that makes sense. And I do like it when a movie doesn't treat you like a child and you kind of have to do the thinking and like piecing some things together yourself.
Yeah.
Maybe if it encourages another rewatch, sure. Yeah. But that's where it didn't exactly fit. Mm-hmm. But every once in a while, I still couldn't quite get fully on board.
You know, to me, I think the reason this film spoke to me so much back in 2003 is that it pushed the limits of gore at the time. And not just the limits of gore, but the limits of sheer brutality.
Yes. The torture porn scene, you could say, was
except that to me, this doesn't really have much of a torture porn feel to it in comparison to, I mean, she's captured, Alex's character is captured, but she's never really tortured in the way that most characters are, where they start getting body parts chopped off here and there, or like hostile with the Achilles tendon split, where you know people aren't going to be able to get out of this type of stuff, or any of the Saw films or anything like that. This felt to me more like a very, very cat and mouse, very stalkerish, very like someone going after their prey, but as a hunter with just no, not pulling any punches.
That was probably an unfair comparison. I meant to say that the sheer inventiveness of the acts of brutality invoked kind of the torture porn-y sort of sentiment that was going on at the time.
Yeah.
Not that the scenario is just like somebody sat down and just getting the screws.
Totally. Yeah. This definitely felt like, to me, with a lot of the stuff coming out around then, it did feel like a breath of fresh air because, so like the father decapitation scene, if you see the unrated version, goes on for a long time where the blood just flows out of his out of the neck after the head just gets popped off. In other versions, it does get trimmed down, so it takes away from the impact of it. Same with the mother's death when she gets her throat slashed and it just pulls back and blood just flows out everywhere. The subtlety of the little brother's death I like, and then they do pan down to see the image afterwards. Mm-hmm. Once again, they kill a fucking dog. I don't know why every movie has to kill a dog just to be like, hey,
to
guess
show
what?
How much of a bastard they
it's
are.
Just, to me, it's frustrating because, like, I don't know what it is, but I don't think it's necessary to kill the dog in every single fucking horror film. I find that to be annoying. That is my biggest problem with High Tension, actually, is that. But I have that with most movies anyway. Once we get out of the house, that to me is where like he cranks up the brutality even more.
Yes.
When Jimmy gets the axe to the chest, that in itself was rough, but he pushes it in a little deeper, and then when he falls, he pushes it so it goes through his back. It like pops into him and just goes all the way in. You hear the crunching, and I'm like, it's that extra. So I think the reason this really spoke to me more is that I did a lot of studying on the MPAA back in high school and early in college because films in the 80s were getting cut left and right. We had the PG-13 rating come out in the early 80s because of things like Temple of Doom and Red Dawn and Gremlins. So seeing that there was this, seeing how the MPAA had chopped down films over the 80s and the 90s and things were getting just ripped apart, this was the thing where I'm like, I want to see the full uncut the way it's meant to be.
Right.
And seeing it like that and seeing that a director wasn't afraid to hold back, that's what I loved. And that's what got me like revved up about French New Wave horror. And basically foreign horror in general, because I feel like they're willing to go places that American directors sometimes can't go.
Usually because of the restrictions of the MPAA or like the MPAA with like kind of slashing and burning movies.
Yeah.
Directors would neuter themselves while making a movie just so that they know that it won't
exactly be cut. And now it's a different story. I mean, we are, you know, 14 years later, a lot has changed and the MPAA does not have as much stringent control as they used to. They still do, but things are not getting hacked down nearly as much as they used to get hacked down. So then we get to the chase scene, where they end up in that like greenhouse type area.
Right.
And I loved that with the flashlight hanging in there. And before that twist is revealed, you're like, oh man, this guy's like super smart and really likes to fuck with people.
Right,
How many people has he killed? Does he do this a lot? So I like that. And then she gets that fucking, like 2x4 wrapped up with all the barbed wire and just goes ballistic on him. And I'm like, holy shit, this is fucking brutal.
Mm-hmm.
And then you get the twist where it's her. First question, where the fuck did she get that truck?
Yeah.
That's my biggest question.
It's sheer inventiveness. Like, you know, we can find trucks.
I'm going to say maybe she found it on the property somewhere. Maybe it was part of the families or something.
Mm-hmm.
But then we get that reveal that she is actually the killer, and then just seeing that the dead main killer comes back, and you're like, oh, okay, it's all in her head.
Yeah.
So she like basically won the mental war, but then didn't.
So and here's the thing: when we see stuff like this, where like oh, it was in his head the whole time or something, we have like this sort of like dial back of like a plot dumpy kind of explainy thing of just like, yes, see, when you did this, this was how it, like, it's kind of like leading the audience right. along on the Primrose path. And I understand that this movie didn't want to do that.
Yeah.
And more power to you, like, let them do the heavy lifting. Right. But there's got to be something, there needs to be a line to draw for every single instance.
Yeah,
that this is happening, and the movie kind of forgets a few.
It touches on a few, and then kind of it's like suspension of disbelief for the rest of them.
Yeah, and yeah, take with that what you will, yeah. but like I feel like it kind of dropped the ball a couple of times with that explanation.
Some on the explanation a little bit, yeah. There's definitely some issues with it, but you know that once she gets that giant saw. Really, that's the moment that you realize
that's
like,
the movie. That's the ball game.
Once,
like, that's
once the saw happens and she gets that guy in the car who's trying to who stops the side of the road, crashes his car, basically, restarted to try and save Alex's character. You're like, oh shit! She goes in with that fucking saw, gets him in the chest. It hits him like 5 or 6 times. You're seeing blood spray everywhere. Alex's character is soaked in blood in the back seat. Then she tries to go out the window and gets her Achilles stabbed with glass. And I'm like, oh, God.
Oh, that sucks.
I'm like, okay, well, you definitely tried to go a little bit torture porny with the Achilles pull because that was just brutal. Actually, that was probably the most brutal part of the film is watching her pull glass out of her ankle.
Yeah, that's and that's when I say that it's like, it never felt like gratuitous, but the types of, again, inventiveness of the scenarios of brutality invoked a lot of like, yeah, this is really 2000s-y. People wanted to be really edgy with
it. Was no holds barred.
No, absolutely.
That's what, oh man, that's what really drove it home to me is that he was brutal for this just brutality's sake almost. Mm-hmm. And then the final moment where you find, because in the beginning you see Marie's character in the mental hospital or in a hospital, and you're like, oh, she must have survived this awful attack. Let's hear her story.
Right.
So that's kind of how partially I take some of the discrepancies is that she's telling her story, but at the same time, because they ask, like, is it on or whatever? I think she asks if, like, if they're recording or something. So she's telling her story, and then we're finding out the other story, which is how you can kind of tie some of that together and be like, oh, okay. Mm-hmm. She's telling it from her perspective, even though that's not what really happened.
Right.
And then just seeing at the end where Alex is like, she can't see me, can she? And they're like, no. And then just she senses her and just shoots the arms up right there.
Right, yeah.
Newborn kicks in again.
Mm-hmm.
And oh, it's just great.
It has punch. It's a great way to kind of kick it off. And it's a dynamite ending, even though it misses the mark a couple of times in the beginning of the third act.
Sure.
And it's still, though, honestly, solidly worth a recommend. Having seen that, especially if you're into the gore,
especially
really
now.
Inventive. I like when it can go different places with great effects.
Yeah,
really, really good. So you had a bit of an interesting story that you were saying before when we wrap up.
This is actually, so I'd seen this film. I'd shown a bunch of people this movie. Most people liked it a lot. They were like, "Yeah, it's fucking insane." And I was like, "Yeah, the ending you might not like." Most people were like, "No, it's fine. It's cool. It works." It wasn't until later, I was dating this girl at the time, she had seen the movie with me and liked it. We went over to this thrift store, and we picked up a bunch of books one day. She wanted to get some paperbacks or whatever, and they were like 25-cent paperbacks. We went in there, and she was like, this seems interesting. Dean Koontz's Intensity. She starts reading it. Like, the next day, she's like, hey, so High Tension was based on a book, right? I was like, no. She's like, oh, that's interesting because they totally ripped off this book. And so I started reading Dean Koontz's Intensity. And it's about this girl, China, who goes with her friend to her their parents' place in the middle of nowhere so they can study. Someone shows up, kills everyone, and even kills the friend, and then, like, takes the body with him or something in this camper.
Almost
and then
verbatim.
She sneaks into the back of it and basically... It is Dean Koontz's Intensity. Now, there's been a lot of talk about it, because I was like, that's insane, that can't be real. And then later on, it was revealed that Alex Aja did read Intensity, was inspired from Intensity. Dean Koontz got really mad about this and almost sued him for straight up just like
royalties.
And, yeah, like yeah. copyright infringement, just mm-hmm. being like, you literally just like stole an idea. Dean Koontz didn't sue, and his reason was that he didn't want to be associated with such trash because it was so brutal at the time. And well, Dean Koontz stuff isn't, I mean, it's violent.
Right.
But it's a lot, there's a lot of supernatural stuff that goes into it. And I think he just was angry about the entire situation, but just didn't want to make a huge deal about it.
That kind of is weird to me because, like, if it is a blatant ripoff of something that you did, like, I don't understand why you wouldn't want to pursue that.
Literally, the twist is the only thing that changes it.
Right. And I mean, I certainly wouldn't have faulted him if he had sued because it seems like it's a pretty convincing case that.
Yeah, and Dean Koontz's Intensity was made into a TV film in like around, I think, 97 with John C. McGinley in it as like the main bad guy. So yeah, that part was a little, that kind of like soured me a little bit on the film. But at the same time, you know, it does stand on its own. Not many people know Dean Koontz's Intensity too much. I think they know High Tension better than they know Intensity.
And and which kind of boggles my mind because the exact reason that people sue in cases like this is because this small thing that has not been heard about gets blown up into a huge thing that people will see.
Yeah.
Like, it kind of blows my mind because I usually like to think of some of these things as a little frivolous, but this seems pretty on the money. Like, this is almost what you should have done. but that's, I found that fascinating that that's exactly the reason that he did not sue.
Yeah, and that's just crazy to me. Like, maybe he didn't think it was going to be as much of an international hit at the time. So, you know, you take and you cherry pick from different areas or different types of stuff. But it's way too similar. Like, the first 90 pages are almost, it's almost identical.
Yeah.
I mean, there's more backstory on the main character and she has, like, this troubled past and whatever, which is explained in the book, which you don't obviously see in the film of High Tension. So there are differences as far as that goes, but it hits the beats pretty.
Yeah, that seems pretty much on point. But anyway, that's pretty much gonna do it for us here today.
Yeah, and I highly recommend this film though. I know the ending is gonna piss off a lot of people, but at least see it for the gore effects and for what Alex Aja was trying to put out there. I think it was successful. I enjoy it very much. And make sure when you see it, you are seeing the full uncut version.
I accidentally saw the right version of this.
That's good, though, because I watched it on, I think I watched it on Shudder, and it said it was the NC-17 version, which should be the uncut version. It was not the uncut version. Mm-hmm. There were multiple, the gore was trimmed down immensely, because I remember, I'm like, no, this is way more violent than that.
And that was for the U.S. release. What?
That was for the U.S. NC-17 release. Right. I think is not the full uncut version. So you need to find the international version. So you said you found it on iTunes, right?
On iTunes, yes.
All right. So yeah, if you haven't seen it and you want to see it, definitely rent it off iTunes. Get the unrated version of it. It's a lot of fun.
It's good, and I think that the effects are working great. It looks great. I think the ending stumbles quite a bit, but again, I think the overall thing of what they were going for really works. Like you said.
I think so.
Solid recommend. Easily worth checking out.
Yeah, and it's a short 91 minutes. So like you're not, even if you end up hating it, you only lost an hour and a half.
Exactly. So that is going to do it for us.
Yeah.
At Oh the Horror. Thanks again so much for listening. I'm Steve Allman.
And I'm Rob Holmes.
And we'll see you next time.
Look at me, Damien. It's all for you.
Horror. Come, it is time to keep your appointment with the Wicker Man.
Horror. When there's no more room in hell, the dead will walk here.